All right, well, small chairs and tables or not, I think we're probably ready to go since it's a little bit after 10. So this is the How to Get an Agent panel, and what we will do, you'll all be shocked about this, is to go down and get introductions first from everybody. And then I have a couple of questions that I want to ask that we sort of culled from some feedback from the panelists, too. And then we'll probably give you guys a little bit more time for question and answer, since I have a suspicion that you're here for practical reasons and not for some meta reason, like, yeah, how do other people get agents? I already know. So, assuming you're here for not those reasons, we will try to do that. So, so we can start down here with Megan.
Okay. My name is Megan Crewe. I live here in Toronto. I write pretty much all kinds of speculative fiction. My first book, a young adult paranormal novel called Give Up the Ghost, came out from Hemley Holtz this past fall. And as far as agents go, as far as agents go, I'm represented by Kristen Nelson of Nelson Literary Agency.
Cool. I'm Ian Keeling. When I started my writing career, I tended to do more poetry and then realized I wasn't getting paid because there is no money in poetry. It's really, seriously, that's the first thing you need to know.
True.
You're not going to get an
agent for
poetry. I've been published in Realms. I have stuff coming out in Realms of Fantasy and on spec. And I am represented by Miriam Chris of Irene Gooden.
My name is Adrienne Kress, and I am currently the author of two books. Technical term is middle grade, 8 to 12, like the first couple of Harry Potters, that kind of age range. Pirate adventure stories with a fabulous sense of humor, let me just say. The funny thing is I often get a laugh when I say that. I'm like, no, really. No, they're kind of funny. I too live in Toronto, and I am represented. Well, I've just got myself a new agent, so I am now represented. It's so exciting to... what is her name? Now, Jessica Regal, the Jean Vinegar Agency in New York.
My name is Gregory Wilson. I am an associate professor of English at St. John's University in the States. I'm the only, I guess, non-Canadian on the panel. So I'll bring you the American agent. Yeah, I know. I am also an author. My first novel came out last year, called The Third Sign, which is a work of epic fantasy. And I actually published it before I got an agent. My agent I've been with now for about four and a half months, maybe 5 months now. And he is Roger Williams of the Publisher Parish Literary Agency. And he's already doing work for me because this has just been optioned for a film.
Ooh,
and
nice.
He negotiated that. So, yeah, thank you.
Well,
maybe from your lips to God's ears, right?
We will less money than you anticipated.
We'll see. Exactly. Okay, so let's. I'm going to start with. This is going to be the panel of obvious opening questions, which is, how did you get your agent? In the case of Adrian.
So I've gone
through. You want to go the other direction this time?
Sure. I told you I got a new agent, right? So the original agent I got, I was actually living in England for a couple of years, and that's when I wrote Alex, and that's where I decided to submit for agents. So I submitted several in England. The submission process is a little different to the North American one, which is often you just send a letter to an agency, and then they will decide if they want to read some of your book, and then after that, they might decide to read all of your book. In England, what you send them, and I much prefer this method, quite frankly, is a cover letter, a synopsis, and the first three chapters right from the off, which I think is lovely. So I sent that out to about 14 agents. Okay, so this is where I get to my funny story. So you see, I hadn't actually finished writing the book. That is a huge no-no when you're writing fiction. Finish writing the stupid book. No agent is going to request only, like, they want to read the whole book. You can't get away with saying, well, here it is, if you like it, don't worry, I'll write a good ending. You know, you need to show, because endings are hard, as we know, and so you need to show you can do it. But I figured, since it said in all the literature that it would take around 4 to 6 weeks to hear back, that I had 4 to 6 weeks, and that would give me a really solid incentive to write. So I think it was like the last 15K or something of the book. And the next day, that's how amazing, this is all snail mail, by the way, that's how amazing the English post office is. The very next day, I get a phone call from the Darley Anderson agency, and they want the full manuscript. And I go, yeah, sure, no problem. Yeah, okay, hang up the phone, what do we do? Yeah, exactly. So
2 liters of Mountain Dew and
exactly.
Straight on to
so
the morning.
So 3
right?
days, basically. I took 3 days to finish it. Meanwhile, because my mommy and daddy are awesome, it's actually the book is dedicated to Teen Kress, my parents. My last name is Kress. I sent that back to them so that they could go over spelling and grammar. And I wrote the end in 3 days, printed it off, and then got it to the agency. 2 months later, the agent gets in touch, likes it, thinks it's a little, you can tell the way I talk, a little long-winded, you know. So if I could cut it by maybe 10,000 words, did that, and gave myself 2 weeks for that, and then signed with them. That's sort of the short version. Now, what just happened to me, which is very interesting, I apologize, I've got 2 halves to this story now. Didn't think I would have 2 halves, you know, back in December, but then January happened. I got a call from the head agent. So I was represented by a woman, a lovely woman, Becky Stradwick, who represented the children's section of the agency. She was leaving to go to Random House UK to be an editor. And the head agent calls me to tell me that they're not sure if they are actually going to replace her, and that any sort of clients without existing contracts, they're sort of like, we don't want you to be languishing with a manuscript or anything. So we're kind of... we think we should part ways, and I cry like a baby. Well, probably in 2 seconds I'll just start crying for no particular reason. I cry really easily, and of course talking to a very, you know, stiff upper lip British gentleman on the phone, I think he was like, oh, dear God, what am I? Like, sobbing into the, okay.
Pity doesn't work very well. Pity.
Yeah. So, well, I was just so upset, but at the same time, I totally understood. So in my head, and this is, I think, a very important thing we can get to maybe later, over the last several years, just by coming to conferences like this and being part of the online community, I've actually met a lot of other agents, and I've met a lot of authors and editors. And I work very hard not to badmouth anyone, at least not in public. You're just maintaining a reputation, realizing that people move. Editors move from house to house. Agents, it's ridiculous how much people move around. And I'm not used to it because my parents are teachers and they stayed at the same job for 30 years and that's it. So it's kind of been nerve-wracking. So in the back of my head, I was compiling a list of agents I had developed relationships with. And one happened to be, many of you have seen me on a panel with Leslie Livingston, the author of Wonder Strange, the trilogy. She and I are quite good friends. And I had met her agent because I met her with her. And I call up Leslie, again, remember, sobbing. She's at work. I know her extension off by heart. Leslie, my agent, Justin, dump me. Can you call? Yeah, I'll call Jessica. Thank you. So she called her agent, and as luck would have it, because we met, she liked my stuff. She was like, yeah, totally. Get Adrienne to send me her stuff. I sent her, in this case, it wasn't a query letter, it was an explanation of what had happened, how I was totally available, how I didn't, because that's another thing. You don't want to have sort of prior connections, and you don't want to look like you're shopping around for a new agent with an old one, because that's, unfortunately, even though it's business, there's a lot of personal involved in the arts, and they'll take offense to the idea. And then a new agent might go, well, if you, you know, hung on to your other agent while trying to find a new agent, well, will you do that to me? You know, so you have to sort of make a clean break. Utterly terrifying. Utterly terrifying. And then find somebody else. So I let her know that. 2 days later, she responds. I had sent her my manuscript, and she had edited the whole thing in 2 days. Somebody has ADD. And I was very fortunate to sign with her. So that is my how I got an agent twice. No, I expect to be mentioned a lot. No.
Yeah, I know. Mine's like talk to her. Mine involves a little less sobbing. A little. I'm a rube. I'm the world's worst salesman for myself. I can't sell myself. Hence 38, and I have no book right in front of me. But I had finished my second novel. My first novel won't actually end up in Switzerland in a vault, but it's not going to be the first novel. And then I wrote my second novel, which is a YA middle grade called it was called Make Believe at the time. It's now called Believe, based on imaginary friends. And I got a good buzz about this book. And anytime I've only had that happen a couple of times with stuff I've done, and I was like, no, there's something nice about this one. This one's not bad. It's not bad. And I wanted to get an American agent. That was one of the things I wanted. I wanted to get the book sold in America first. The book, and we'll talk about probably optioning and the fact that it's not the dream that everybody thinks it is, but that was one of the things I wanted to have the potential with. I wanted the big market first, because I didn't really want the $500 advance. I was like, $5,000 won't save my life, but it's better than $500. And I'm one of those people who has to meet people. I did start doing the send off the manuscript, and you have to do that, and it got turned down by a couple of places. And I only started going to conferences last year, but that's where I started to realize this is where you've got to start, you know, meeting people. Yep. I'm also terrified of walking up to people. If you are one of those people, I have the highest empathy for you, because it's like I'm terrified of that. So I was trying to figure out what to do, and I had met Adrienne last year when I latched onto her, Leslie, and I was like, shiny, they have books out.
They are shiny.
And I ended up, and they are very shiny, and very funny. And I ended up basically asking a bunch of people I met at conferences. I said, listen, I'm looking for an agent. What kind of conferences are there? I looked into the NYC, New York City, the pitch and shop. And then Adrienne mentioned Backspace, and it's a two-day conference in the States where you go down and you actually sit with a bunch of authors, and in addition to panels and everything like that.
Just for a second. We actually have a really awesome list. I'm just seeing everybody taking notes as well, but we do have a list of like a lot of places to visit, and the Backspace thing is written down here as well. I'll keep taking notes, but know that we've also have this all written down for you guys, so don't panic if you haven't.
We have cheat sheets. And so Backspace, basically you will work your query letter on the first day with a bunch of agents, and then the second day you'll work the first two pages. And it's a bunch of authors sitting around reading those things, and agents do things like, stop, all right, this is the weather, we don't care. Stop, oh, this is good. Hey, why don't you send me a few pages? Right? So it's great. You get the face-to-face, they get to hear your stuff, and then you get basically direct interaction with eight agents and work through a bunch of others. When I went down there, I caught lightning in a bottle, and the story is too long to tell on this panel.
It is hilarious, so corner him.
It's really bizarre. I turned into one of those stories where if you come to enough of these, they say, okay, don't worry about that because it's never going to happen to you, and for a little short while, it did. But it basically amounted to the two agents that I had targeted and researched and wanted to represent me stopped me after 16 people had read, and on the third line of my novel went, all right, dude, you need to send me the full. And the other one went, yeah, me too. And I sent it to them, and 12 hours later, Miriam emailed me and said, okay, yeah, I want this book. And actually, one of the things I want to talk about is just what happens when things, because this is a slow-moving industry, but there are times when, man, it moves fast, and I was not ready for it, and everything went well. But there were a couple of people where if I had thought about it, I was like, we can sometimes forget that there's human beings on every side of this thing. Because basically, I had to turn somebody down. And that's freaking weird. But I had to tell an agent after who got back to me after 48 hours, I'm sorry, that wasn't fast enough. That's messed up.
You weren't that sad about that, were you? I mean, there was a part of you that felt
I will honestly say this. I don't cry. The only time I've ever cried was in a hostel. I'm in a hostel. By the way, I'm also 1,000 miles from home in a hostel when I finally found out about this.
That's
I was
awesome.
Freaking out. I went to visit a friend in Philadelphia who basically went, okay, you're still the same idiot. But I had to leave a message for somebody, and I hung up, and I'm in a hostel, and I actually cried because she was so enthusiastic about the book.
That's cool.
That sucks because that's awesome, but she got me first.
Okay, I actually had a very traditional, straightforward process. Sorry, I'm sobbing.
The sobbing?
Well, no, there probably was a little sobbing bit when it actually happened. I'm really very kind of shy and not good with in-person things, so I really went the letter and email query
route. That's cool.
Yeah.
Or just that, like, yeah.
So I had never met any of the agents that I was querying. I researched them online, made up my list. I kind of had tiers. It was like, these are the agents that represent people whose books I totally love, and I would love to be represented by them, and these are people who I don't know as much about, but they also sound really good, and sort of sent off about 10 queries at a time, and then if I got a rejection, then I would send off another one or different batches. And I ended up getting quite a few requests for partials and fulls, and Kristen requested the partial, she requested the full, and then I got the call.
No!
Which was basically the whole time I was kind of of shaking while I was talking to her on the phone and trying to say I'm really calm and sane. And you really like my book, yeah. Awesome. and then, of course, there's the whole, I actually had a similar thing where there are agents who had the pulls. And what I did was I contacted all the other people who still held the pull, and I was like, I have somebody who's interested in representing me, just wanted to let you know, kind of thing. It ended up being fairly simple because the people who had the full, they ended up saying, okay, we're not sure that, you know, we're quite as enthusiastic as somebody's already offered. So I had a very simple choice. I was like, okay, there's an agent who loves my stuff, going with her.
And she loves you. You read her blogs, like she loves it. Kirsten Nelson, I've actually put her as one of the agents to check out. Mm-hmm. She's a very good blogger, but she blogs about this chick.
That's cool. So, all right, so I'll tell my story quickly, and then Adrian points out quite rightly that we should define some of these terms just in case. Most people probably know the basic idea, but just what a query, full, partial, what is the call that everyone, oh! So my story, it does not involve a lot of sobbing, but it does involve something a little bit different, and it has very much to do with networking, as you guys are pointing out. This book started getting written probably around 2002, and it took me about 2 years to write. So it was finished in 2004, and that's because I was at the same time doing the first 2 years of my, you know, job at St. John's, so I was, you know, involved in trying to do that. I was publishing journal articles, I was working on academic stuff. And so when I got this published in 2004, I pulled out at the time a combination. I did a little bit of internet stuff, but I did much more with, like, the writer's market books of agents. And I went down and I said, okay, these people represent fantasy, and here is a set of them that actually, you know, represent authors that I love too, and so I can target these people and so on. And I send this out. And I sent out probably to about 74, 75, probably agents, not all at once. I've heard people do that. Don't send out 75 letters at once. It's a bad idea for reasons we'll probably talk about a little later. But I sent out just about 5 or 10 at a time. And I got pretty good responses from a number of them, but the response that I got in general was, we like this, but epic fantasy is oversold. We like this, but, which is frustrating, because most of the fantasy I write is not epic fantasy. I was just like, look, I'm sorry this is the first book I wrote, okay? But, like, you know, I like it. And so, and so nothing happened. So I went to Gen Con in Indianapolis in the States in 2005. And I met the editor who would end up buying this book, a guy named John Helfers, who's since been nominated for a Hugo, who was working with a smaller press at the time. And I told him about the story, and he said, well, the reason Epic Fantasy is oversold is because people are buying it. So, hell, I want to see it. By definition, right?
Wow.
So
logic.
Logic. You know, I was just kind of like, that's true. And so I went back and forth with him, and just to the slowness of the business. So he starts reading it in the beginning of 2006, makes suggestion for changes. I resubmit at the beginning of 2007. He takes, you know, a number of months. We go back and forth on more revisions. Makes me the offer, which I signed in 2008, and the book then comes out in 2009. So when people tell me, how is your new book? New book? It's not new. So
you're like, what, did I even write that?
Right, exactly. The publisher. I went in a different order. And the reason I'm telling that story is because there's no question in my mind that part of the reason I was able to get an agent was, one, because he did like my second book, as I'll talk about in a second, but secondly, because I had a publishing history. You know, I had demonstrated that I had published with a reputable press, that I had been to these conventions and conferences, that I had the chutzpah to start going to these things before I had anything other than academic work published and acted like I knew what I was doing, you know. And so he knew that I had that I had a commitment to the career, and that I obviously someone else had thought I was good besides me. And so that was part of what happened as well. When I wrote my second book, which is part of a separate series called Icarus, and is sort of a very different, distinctive kind of voice, I did something similar, except this time around in my agent search, I used the internet almost exclusively. I used sites like Agent Query, which we have on that sheet. I used a site like querytracker.com, which is also on this sheet. And I also joined a couple of writers' groups, including Backspace, also, you know, some others like that. Absolute Right is another one that is a public board that you know. So different things like that, and so I tried to be even more careful in my targeting. And the response was even a little bit better. I had more partial manuscripts and more full manuscripts out. And then about 5 months ago, 4.5 months ago or so, I had one person who not only requested the full but said, you know, I really like this. He's like, you know, and I think this is really good, and I'd like to talk to you about it. So we kind of emailed back and forth, and then we got what is called the call. Now, I have to say, as a formerly jaded author who had heard these things, oh, you get the call, and they say they love your work, and they're enthusiastic, like, yeah, yeah, blah, 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 blah. You know, what they do is they're like, all right, fine, I'll look at it for 5 seconds, and don't call me again. Like, that's probably what it is. But he calls me up, and he's like, this was Roger Williams, my current agent, and he said, you know, I love this book. I love the voice. I love how it's written. I can sell it. I think it's great. I said, you people do this. This wasn't all BS. Like, it's actually a fact. And I said that to him at the time. I'm like, you really do say those things. He's like, yeah, it's a great book. I love it. I couldn't put it down. I said, okay. And so I ended up signing with him. And he said later on, he said, yes, it helped that you had a publishing history. It helped that you had these other things that you had done. But it was a combination. There was a little bit of that, but it was mostly just the voice grabbed him, the book grabbed him, and I think that you'll probably will all say the same thing. It may seem like an impossible task. It may seem like that is not, you know, but who's ever going to say that about my work? If the work is good enough, it will eventually be said. We're going to talk a little bit about myths on this panel, and one myth I just want to explode is the idea that if your work is good enough, that it will never find any kind of voice or place or position. That's not true. On two levels. Number one, because small presses exist as an option for someone who's starting out in their career, and my agent is now shopping my second book to major publishers, to Del Rey and places like that. And there's a long history of people who start with a small press model and go to something else. But also, agents are always looking for good, intelligent, thoughtful work, and curiously enough, that's exactly what editors and publishing houses are looking for. So although the industry itself does have issues, and you're all fully aware of what those issues are probably in this room, one of the issues that has not developed is this idea that we're going to stop publishing good books. That's dumb. The publishing industry very much wants to publish and find good work, and the agents have become, by and large, the gatekeepers for that industry on a large scale. And so it can happen is, I guess, the point that I would make about all that. So let's talk a little bit then briefly about like what the different parts are of these things, what the query and the partial and the full is. The query letter, and I'll just start and then people can add stuff that I forget. The query letter is a one-page, never more than one page, letter in which you describe very briefly the hook, you know, the sort of when so-and-so has such-and-such happened to him or her, you know, he or she never expects that, blah, 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 and then, you know, some hook sentence that people will read and go, wow, this is interesting, and I'd like to read the next paragraph of your query letter, in which you describe a little bit more about what the book is about, a little bit more briefly about what the plot is, although not in great detail, but just a sense of some of the specific things about the plot, and hopefully what will make the book theoretically stand out from other competitors in the market. All of this being done in an incredibly compressed way, by the way, and then finishing with a couple of sentences about your own credentials, if you've had short stories published before, if you have some kind of, I mean, when I first started, I had no credentials at all in the creative market, but I did have an academic book published by Clemson University Press, I had 10 journal articles, I had a PhD, so I had some credentials. I mean, hell, if I'm going to spend that much money in graduate school, I'm going to, like, throw some credentials out that I have, and so I did in that final paragraph. And then, you know, thank you for your time, and please let me know if you need any further information, and my so-and-so is available. And that's the basic idea of what a query letter is.
I think also it's important to note that, because you talk about a hook and you talk about that, the fact is you are going to go to a million, of agent websites where they will go, okay, this is what I want from a, I call it a query letter. I think it's just pronounced however you feel like pronouncing it. And they'll say different things. Some agents probably will say, oh, for crying out loud, hooks are for screenplays. I don't want a hook. Or some agents will go, do not give me rhetorical questions. And another person will go, rhetorical questions are my favorite things.
Yeah, that's
ever.
True.
I've never had ice cream.
And they go, no, they're not.
John Smith did when he...
I think the important thing is to understand the philosophy behind the query letter. And it's really just to get an agent excited about your book. Most agents, although it's interesting, if you go to Rob, you know how Rob has, Rob, sorry, Rob Sawyer, Rob, you know, we're BFFs. Robert J. Sawyer has a publishing imprint himself. And if you go to his publishing imprint, he will be one of the only ones I've ever read where he's like, we want to know themes. Because most other agents and everybody do not give a crap about themes.
Right.
They want to know what happens, who's the main character, and why, like you said, why this
why
stands
they should
out.
Care.
And it can stand out simply by the tone. I wrote what I think I'm funny. What I wrote was a humorous query letter. It was, because the stories themselves, they're fun and quirky, but what matters most in my mind is the sense of humor. So that's what I wanted the agents to really get, that this is a funny book, and that's why. It's interesting. But you don't want to say, this is a funny book, and that's why it's interesting. You kind of, you know, show, don't tell. Have we all heard of that saying? It's instead of saying, he was so angry, you go, he shook his fists at the air and yelled. And that's showing as opposed to telling, and people tend to prefer showing. So the idea is just to get an agent excited. 9 times out of 10, you want to kind of stick with the rules because they're there for a reason. They're not there because, you know, agents are evil. It's there because after years and years of doing this, they've discovered this is a really solid method.
Yep.
And there's a great on agentquery.com, which is on here, there's a whole section, a massive section about writing a query, so you can, totally look that up. But keep in the back of your mind that this is just about getting somebody excited and interested. And the whole credentials thing, if you don't have any, you don't have to put them down.
Right. Well, I should have mentioned don't lie.
Yeah. Well, don't lie.
Don't lie.
The number one thing about query letters is if it's well written, they're going to read your pages. And by the way, anybody who says just send us a query letter, don't send us any pages.
Send them pages.
Send them pages. Okay, and this is, by the way,
five.
It's from agents.
Like five.
The
like
agent
five.
Said, yeah, we have on our website, don't send us pages. You can send us pages. You don't send them like 15, 20, 30, but you can send them 5 because they want to know how you can write.
Yep.
And all they need from the query letter is to know that you don't put words in places wrong than things.
Like that.
And the other one thing is comparables. Everybody always wants to do the, my book is like Harry Potter meets AC/DC.
I would read that.
That would be awesome, yeah, really.
Now,
what a highway to Harry. I dig that. That's awesome.
You can use comparables. Don't use Harry Potter.
Don't
use Lord of the Rings.
Don't use the obvious ones that sort of make it seem like you haven't read any books.
Yeah.
Because if you say, this is like Twilight, it suggests that you've only heard of the most popular book that's ever been. But don't be so ridiculously obscure either to show off your, like, because then they're going, oh, look at the ego on this person. You're talking about, like, some obscure little German book that nobody,
don't compare it to The Cure.
But the key, I think, with comparisons, and again, this is ridiculously technical, I know, but with comparisons, instead of saying, this is the next Harry Potter, it's a ridiculous, tiny little difference, but if you say, this book will appeal to people who enjoy Harry Potter stuff, because that's everybody, but to the people who enjoy Alex and the Ironic Gentleman, and also possibly those who like The Third Sign, you can. It's not like you're saying, I am this, but I understand the market and the kinds of audience I'm looking for.
Yeah,
and it's a fine distinction, but it takes the ego out of it.
That's a good
point. That's actually, I actually had a line like, I didn't use specific books, but I used authors. I said, you know, this will appeal to fans author and that author.
Yeah.
Another thing about the hook or the book description, the query that I've heard, which I think is really, really good advice, it should basically sound like the jacket flap or back cover description.
Yeah.
You know, you pick up a book and you go, oh, I really want to read this book based on this blurb. You want it to sound like that. You want it to be like somebody picked this up in the bookstore.
I want to say something to that, which is taking us to a side tangent a little bit, but with the bookstore and picking up a blurb. A lot of people get understandably frustrated with agents because they are, as you say, the gatekeepers. With small presses, you can deal directly with editors, but really they're kept from us. It's the agents you have to deal with. And a lot of people get really freaking angry. How can you judge my book based on a query letter alone and indignant? And to be fair, like I said, I prefer the British style of actually sending some chapters. But what I read this once, and I think it's a freaking genius, and it sort of goes to what you're saying, a book blurb. Think about when you go into a bookstore, and you go in. So the first thing you actually see is the cover. So you don't even have to deal with the cover when you're sending out your materials, right? But the next thing, chances are you flip it over, and you read what it's about. And if that sparks your interest, you go, okay. And you maybe read a couple of the first pages, or as I do, I flip through. I'm so pathetic. I love dialogue, so I do this. I'm like, is there enough dialogue? Excellent. Okay, I'll buy it. That's how I am. I think it's being the actor in the plays. But you do the exact same thing that an agent does, and it's the exact same steps. And you can judge whether a book is going to appeal to you. Like, you go, okay, I do not really like pirates at all. No, thank you. And you know right away you're not going to want to read that book. Or you go, oh, I love pirates. Okay, awesome. Oh, but, oh, I don't like the way she writes with this sort of, oh, no, I don't like that. You know, and you move through step. So when it isn't 100% fair because you know, a query letter, as good at writers as we are, you know, you really want people to read your book. But at the same time, again, I would, 9 times out of 10, it's actually a very good gauge, and an agent can really tell. So don't, you get frustrated easily, but don't go to that place, because they're not evil people. And as you,
they're people, actually. That's the number one thing I heard at Backspace through all the agents, is they're people, and all the rules that we get drilled into us, and if anybody here has been doing this for a long while, because I've been like 20 years banging my head against the door, there's certain things that you get drilled into your head, things like, you know, send it, leave them alone, send it, leave them alone. It doesn't hurt to remember that there's a human being on the other end, and if you're ever thinking, well, maybe I should bend the rule or break the rule this one time, as a human being, what would you want? And that might not be a bad way to gauge it.
I always say be thoughtful and professional.
Be thoughtful and professional.
Right. I want to mention two things quickly about that, though. Well, one, I want to go back just one quickly that you said, Megan, which is important, which is looking at authors in your query letter. Mm-hmm. It is a very good idea to mention authors that have been represented by the agent to
whom
you
are applying.
But dear
God, please have read their books, because...
Well, yeah, obviously. And obviously make sure that they're in, you know, the same genre. Don't name mystery thriller authors when you're submitting with, you know, like YA fantasy. Like, you know, this will appeal to the same people who love, you know, like... maybe not. So that's the first thing is good. But to get back to the professionalism angle, I do want to point out that professionalism works both ways. The vast majority of agents, as Adrian points out, and as Ian points out, they're people. They're not evil people. They're not intending to harm you or be masochistic and sadistic in both ways, harming themselves and you. But they're not those kind of people. Okay, they're trying to, you know, they love books, they love literature, and they're trying to, you know, make some money at loving literature and what they do, which is what we're all trying to do as well. However, there are some agents, and there have been more of them over the last few years as agents have become a bigger part of the publishing picture and as publishers have outsourced a lot of the acquisition stuff that they used to do to agents, so that agents really become the first line of defense against the enormous amount of crap, frankly, which gets sent their way. Agents now have become that. And the trend has been is that there are some agents, I think, who have let that go to their head and whose reaction to all of you in queries and is not professional. There's one prominent agent that I won't go into who called out an author on her blog for having dared to follow up with a status request 6 months after a requested full.
If you read that blog, because she blogged about it, and she posted the correspondence.
The correspondence with his book title.
You're in the wrong. That was the craziest thing. Yeah, you read the correspondence, that's the evidence. But you're the bitch.
So she's in the wrong. And the point here is that still is the exception. But the point that I want to make, because I'm passionate about this, is professionalism works both ways. Mm-hmm. And you have every right to treat them, you must treat them in a professional way, but you have every right to be expected to be treated professionally. So if someone requests a full manuscript from you and you haven't heard from them in 6 months, you have every right to send them an email and say, hi, I'm sure you're busy, and I just was wondering if you had had a chance to take a look at, you know, something very reasonably worded like that is totally within your rights. If the reaction you get, like this one we're talking about, is, why are you even bothering me? Don't you know who the hell I am? Run away from the agent as fast as you can, because it's not just about professionalism up front when you first get the agent. It's about building a relationship with this person going forward. I really like my agent. He and I get along very well. You know, in addition to the fact that he likes my work, he and I are trying to build a career. We have a career plan. We have a thought about what we're going to do 10 years from now. This is not a short-term thing. And so it's very important to keep in mind that you are the content providers, and ultimately you and the readers who consume your product are the most important aspects of the publishing industry. So I'm giving you a little bit of a pep talk here to say, I hate seeing this thing where authors are like, oh, is it okay if I ask you? Please. You are professionals, and you have a right to be treated that way. And fortunately, most agents do treat you that way. But for the few that don't, and there's a kind of growing number that don't, I'm sad to say, although still a minority.
I don't know if it's a growing number. I think it's a growing visibility because of
the internet. Maybe it's growing visibility, but they're really visible when they are.
That's because they're idiots and they post.
That could be. So run away from those people. You have a right to be treated professionally. So.
But at the same, with the same token, I do read a lot, because I'm on lots of these forums as well, and there are people who... quite frankly, I've never met an agent or worked with an agent who rant about an agent.
That's just
an
bad.
Agent is my is works for me. They're my client. I hire them. And it's like, no, actually, they're a contractor. It's a partnership. Well, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. An agent, for those of you who might not know, takes your work and sells it to an editor. They negotiate contracts with the editor, and these days with all the ebook stuff that's happening, you know, the iPad and all the Kindle stuff, everything's changing.
Yep.
So it's very, very good to have somebody who's on the ball, and lots of, like Kristen, blogs about it, like just demonstration of how awesome agents are. They also negotiate other rights deals, so foreign sales. They negotiate film deals.
Yep.
All that other stuff. And the amazing thing is when I had an agent, she'd sold my book, you know, in England and the States, and I was like, yay. And then I sort of sat back, and then you get a call a couple of months later, hey, we just sold your book to Italy. I'm like, you did? You know, it's, you know, that you do that too? You know? They do so much. And as you said, I think one of the biggest things they do is they are there as a shoulder. They actually are there to help you. This is why the business personal thing, the line is a little hazy, because I've had, as we know, weeping, I have had many a pep talk from my agent, and then they are there to support you throughout your career.
Yep.
For all that, they take 15% of monies domestically, usually around 20% foreign, I think.
It's up to 25.
And it depends. And
which, incidentally, only ever comes after your book has been sold and is earning royalties. You never, ever, ever, ever pay an agent up front for anything.
Run away.
The money goes to the author, not away. That is absolutely critical. People who tell you a reading fee, or even they're sort of semi-legit, but the reading fee is they get to read your manuscript faster. There's a couple of agents who do that.
Yeah, I don't
No. Okay? The money... that's on the sheet. Predators and editors will have a list of the agents that are, you know, reputable, and those that have a list of recorded sales, and those which are part of the AAR and subscribed to, which is the official sort of agents association that has a certain canon of ethics, and so all those sorts of things. But it's very important to keep in mind that money must always go to you, and that is, by the way, their incentive to sell your work.
Yeah.
The reason that they want to build this partnership is they would like to get paid,
yeah.
And that's one of the reasons that they're so anxious to, you know, make these sales. So
yeah.
Sorry.
That's basically it. It's just, I just want to, in case we didn't even actually really know what agents did, that's what they do. They do a lot more than just sell your book. And also, a lot of people balk at the 15%, even though everything I feel like I just described would seem worth it. But if that's not enough, as far as numbers go, you tend to get a much higher advance with an agent, so therefore them taking 15% off of a higher advance, usually you're still going to wind up with more than had you gone on your own. An advance... For those of you, does everybody know what an advance is? I can define it. Who doesn't know? If anybody, okay.
It's money
then we're good. if we all know, then that's cool. I won't define that. But so again, if all the work they do for you is not enough to convince you of 15%,
there's one other thing, by the way, just before we do questions. They will also get you into places that you can't get into yourself,
right? Yeah.
If you are starting out.
That's right.
As I had a meeting with Brandon.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to end up arranging that for myself.
Yeah,
they bump you up the table. The person at Del Rey is the senior editor who was bumped down from the vice president, because my agent was vice president of Simon & Schuster for 25 years before he became a literary agent. So now, you know, he knows that person, and it's sitting on his desk. That gets you past the intern tables, the junior editor tables.
But it also gets you
It gets you through the door.
Scholastic, Penguin, none of them will take an agent.
But even the ones that do, you have to, like Tor, will take 2 years if you try to go the normal method, going through slush and everything else. So this bumps you up a bunch of tables, too. So,
all right.
Questions?
You said the agent
didn't
pay until after the book. So when you get your advance, you get before the book comes out.
It comes out in stages. So.
Yeah, but they do get a percentage.
And so does the agent get paid by you or by the...
Technically, it's a lot easier to go... The question, in case people couldn't hear, is in what order does the agent get their 15% upon the author getting paid? Basically, it makes more sense for the payment to go to the agent, because not only can they just go, okay, yoink, here you go, they also can verify that everything is in order, that you're getting the payment you deserve.
So the publisher usually pays the agent. The agent
they're not
takes
being paid
that,
by the agent. They're
just distributing.
They're a second. They're looking at everything, making sure it's good. Going, here's my 15%, and sending it off to you.
Yeah.
Although mine is mine gets broken up. So mine 15% is going to my agent, and
The
rest comes to me directly.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes you can have it split.
Awesome.
All right.
And that's something that, by the way, you want to research, because there are different ways it gets set up. When they told me how that was set up, I was like, oh, because there's certain tax things that makes it nicer. So a lot of the nitty-gritty is like, there's a lot of research that I can't even tell you about because I'm still at the stage where I'm learning the questions, let alone some of the answers.
We won't get into tax stuff because, quite frankly, I don't think I can answer this question.
Yeah. Pay your taxes.
So, okay. So now, basically, if you want to sell a book, the thing to do is to get an agent right away, if you can.
Yeah.
Well, no. The idea was you couldn't get an agent until you've been published.
Well, that was one of the myths I wanted to
do. Right. So,
and go through that process and then get published, and then maybe you could get an agent.
Yeah, I mean, not, you know, it is not always, you know, as witness my situation, it's not always the case that you need... that you need an agent first, and in a lot of cases people have, I did not do this, but some people also go with a lot of short stories first that are published in places that you get paid for before then an agent will pick you up. That's true in some cases, but still you want to always go for an agent, and in a lot of cases people do this completely cold, where they have, you know, very few credentials at all, so to speak, and yet they get picked up and published, because ultimately what matters, and the thing that, you know, again to emphasize, is what matters is the work. What matters is the quality of the book. What matters is not the people you know. What matters is not the, you know, the cool stuff, titles that you have or don't have. What ultimately matters is the quality of the writing, because that's what's going to matter to someone picking up your book on the shelf. Unless you are incredibly famous celebrity, and I don't see anyone who's incredibly famous celebrity in this room. Unless you're incredibly famous celebrity, you're not going to sell it on the basis of your name, regardless of who you are. And so you have to write the best book you can, and that's what agents are looking for, too. And yes, I do think going for an agent first is always the best way to go if you can. If not, I obviously showed that you can do it in a little bit of a different way, but believe me, I'm glad to have an agent now.
It's tougher if you're selling pure science fiction. It's the one genre that they say is a tougher sell, but it's not impossible.
No, it's not impossible.
Okay.
And it also, it depends what you want to do. If you sort of feel like you want to test the water with a smaller publisher as well, because there are some incredibly good ones out there.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with that. I always have to say, most every author I know went the slush pile. First of all, the slush pile is what they call the queries that come in. It's not, these days, not much of a pile because it's actually, you know, in the computer. But it's... Slush is such a negative-sounding word. It's not a derogatory word. It's just a pile where they have queries. And out of that...
It's the flower patch, okay? Flower patch. It's all beautiful flowers, and it's just roses and others, you know. Yours is one of many roses. Flower patch.
It's literally just a pile where they get queries from. And so don't get all like negative about the concept of the slush pile. Like, everyone's like, oh, the slush pile. It's like, no. The slush pile, how else are you, if you're going to read, like, you've got a list of things. Like, if you're going
to... You do have this image of, like, trolls, you know, women, all right, slush pile,
At the same time, so almost everybody now has gone through the slush pile, has just had a query, then they requested a full, which is the full manuscript, so they want to read the whole thing. And then you're set. But there was something else I wanted to say. I can't remember. So anybody else want to say something?
I know we're loud.
There was something about the getting published.
Should we get another question?
If you can avoid the slush pile, some of the things that we are talking about, if you can find ways around it, and that, by the way, the way you find ways around it is to meet these people face to face if you can.
That helps.
And set yourself up at conference. Go to conference. If I'd been going to conferences when I was 30, I would look much younger than
you. You don't feel that you have to, because like I said, I had not met any agents that I had queried, and several of them wanted to see the book based on the query, and I got my agent that way. And honestly, most of the people I know who have agents got their agents without having any connections at all.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, sometimes they never meet.
Well, I think the sort of takeaway lesson from all that is you have to be who you are. And if you are the kind of person who isn't particularly extroverted or isn't particularly comfortable in those situations, then, you know, forcing yourself to go, you know, I must go up and meet these people, you know, that's, you want to make this as pleasant an experience for you as you can, and one that fits with your own personality as well as you can.
Yeah.
And recognize that there is no absolute one way that is the only way that anyone can do something. There are ranges of options that are more likely to work than other ranges of options. But there is not, you know, the one ultimate way to do things. And so, you know, I agree with Ian. I got a lot out of conference and convention going, and I was used to it as an academic. I had done a lot of it, and I presented like 20 papers on panels before I ever showed up at a, you know, so-called creative kind of conference. And so, for me, I love this kind of stuff. But there are other people who would not get as much out of it. And either way, by the way, regardless of how you do it, again, this is what's ultimately going to matter. Even if you're super exciting, if you write crap, it's still going to be seen as crap, and, you know, it's not going to get you just because you're a nice person is not going to get you through the door.
I remember what I was going to say. Because you were asking about like getting published first and then getting an agent. There is, again, what he said. Whatever suits you best. But there is something to keep in mind. If you want to submit to publisher, if you go agent or publisher, and you're amenable to both, go agent.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
If you submit to publisher first, you are knocking out those publishers
definitely.
For your later agent
yep.
to query. And they might know them better. They might have a specific editor at that publisher that you didn't go to, but since the whole publisher's rejected you, they're off the table.
Definitely, yep.
So agent first, if that's the dilemma, which... Yeah, and like if you want to try small houses and that's it, but if you want agent or publisher, agent first.
I agree that. The other reason that's important is because I think it is extremely important to spend the vast majority of your time. The best way to promote and sell your first book is to write a better second book. Yeah. And so your job is to write. Your job is not principally to sell, promote, do, you know, you do have to do some of those things, but your job is to write. That's why an agent is so important, because they take that off your shoulders. They then become the ones selling the book, and I don't have to worry about it. I wonder what little public, you know, you go do that, Roger, you know, and he can do that. And so that's a big, big help, not having to worry about that sort of thing. So.
Quick question. You've already mentioned unprofessionalism and money going to an agent. Are there any other sort of, obvious red flags that should be run the hell right away?
If an agent is also working for a publisher or runs their own imprint, I can't imagine who that would be, even though I referred to them earlier in this panel.
Yes, I know. We already talked about that.
then that's a problem. The key red flag is to make sure is when an agent is clearly not only going to be representing you in your circumstances. That is to say, you know, when your book comes up, will your agent only have your interests at heart, or will they have other people's interests at heart at the same time? And so agents who have, for example, services where they also will edit for a particular press or will, you know, talk about, you know, they'll say, oh, you know, I can't do this, but there's another couple of agencies that will sometimes turn you down and say, but we have this place that we know of that we recommend for people, and it turns out it's some other small press.
Well, there's actually
anything that
scam.
Makes you feel used car salesman icky, you should go with your gut in those situations. And again, Predators and Editors is a good source online to sort of give you a sense of whether or not there's an issue. Also, the Beware and Background Check Forum, which is on Absolute Right. That's ABSOLUTE. It's on there. WRITE.com. So on that forum, there's a Beware and Background Check that will give you information as well. Those things are very helpful.
There's also, the key is the money thing. You just don't pay. You just don't pay. So
right.
there is an agency, and they keep changing what's called, but there's like the Writers Literary Agency. And basically, they go, we love your work. You submit your work. They don't charge you any fees or anything. And then they go, okay, this is great. We need to get some editing. You can choose an editor if you'd like, but we have one that we'll recommend to you if you want to use them. It's like $50. So you're like, okay, 50. And then it keeps going, and they never submit your work.
No.
They're just scams out
scams.
There. So just the money thing, never pay money.
Right.
If they're not on Predators and Editors, and honestly, that should be your one to go to, because it's really easy to navigate, and they have thousands. Like, they list your best friend might be on there, for crying out loud. And it does list everything from, like, not recommended, runaway, recommended, highly recommended.
Yep.
Some will describe also genre. So if you're looking for specific genres, you want to know where are you going to get your science fiction, who you go to, they'll list things like that. So it's the number one place to start in terms of research, and they know most of the scams. Stuff gets up there quick.
But there are also agents, and this is the complicated thing. There are agents who aren't evil people, who don't want to scam your money, who have gone, you know what, I think I could do this, and have hung their shingle up, because you don't need any accreditation. In fact, the whole AAR thing, you don't actually have to be, and there are some very top agents who aren't part
of it. Yeah, right.
And so... They always say a bad agent is worse than no agent, but it's true. I mean, if you've got an agent who has... So check book sales. Have they actually sold any books? Check their history. If this is their first year and they're just giving it a lark, you don't want to be the experiment on which they try, you know? Let them do it for 5 years, and you go, okay, they figured it out, and then maybe you're interested. It's not worth it. Because I know how desperate we get, and you feel beggars can't be choosers, but like you said, it's professional both ways, and it's your career. And the idea that you can't get a top-tier agent is just simply not true.
Keeping in mind that that agents come in, you know, come in different forms and have different backgrounds. So that, for example, you know, my agent is a little bit newer as an agent, but as I said, you know, he's a vice president of Simon Schuster for 25 years. He's a vice president of Peterson's. You know, he's been in the industry for an enormous amount of time doing specifically this stuff and had made sales by the time I got him. But if I compared him to someone who's been doing it for 20 years, well, obviously they're not going to have the same amount of sales there. But he has a history, and that's the difference. He's not, what do you do? Well, I went to law school for 2 years. That's not the same thing. And someone who says I have legal knowledge is not going to be the same thing as someone who has literary knowledge anyway. So the key thing is to make sure that you're looking at someone who seems competent, not based upon just their profile, but upon what you can discover about them through these sites. Another thing I want to mention, do we have Writer Beware on there?
Yeah.
Also,
yeah.
So Writer Beware is done through CIFWA, and Writer Beware is run by Ann Crispin and Victoria Strauss. And Victoria, who really is underappreciated, I think, who's someone I've spoken to a few times through email, will sometimes give you information if you email her directly, and again, we have links for this, about a particular agent, you know, even publishers, she has information on too, and they have tracked down and pursued and pursued legal action against some of these scam agents and gotten a couple of them in prison, thank God. So there, she is another, and Writer Beware in general is another good resource as well. The point is there's now really not much of an excuse, I think, to be taken in if you're careful about doing your research. There's so many sources out there that you can, if you're careful and be thoughtful and professional, you can avoid these scams.
Use logic.
Just to go back to the idea about bad agent is worse than no agent. There are some new agents out there that sometimes it can be a good thing. If you have a new agent who's at an established agency, they're usually under the guidance of an established agent who has lots of connections, and that can be a really good thing because that can be a very hungry agent who really wants to get in there but still has all the connections.
Definitely.
And they may actually have more time and enthusiasm than somebody who already has a lot of big clients.
That was me. That was exactly both. Both Jessica and my initial agent in England, they were both new agents at an established agency.
And the other thing is that when you do have an agent who's interested in representing you, I think it's really important to talk to some of their current clients. And if you can find out if they have any former clients who aren't their clients anymore, you know, like if you post on a forum, like, I'm considering this agent, does anyone have any information that they would share with me? Because sometimes people will only do it anonymously or privately, because there are cases, I know people who've split with their agents and they're not allowed to talk publicly about why, because forms have been signed and stuff. So it's really good to talk to people who've actually been with that agent and know how they work, and you can ask, like, maybe there's things that are important to you. Do you really want an agent who's going to edit your work before it goes out, or do you want one who doesn't touch it and just sends it to the publishers?
Yep.
You want to know those things, and the current clients can tell you that.
Take your time. You're allowed to take your time.
And
like you get to make the choice, even if you only get one offer, you know, because if you're lucky, you get more than one. If you're not as lucky, you get one. You doesn't matter. Take your time.
And the initial conversation that you have with them, the call, as we call it, where the agent calls you to talk about things, is often very helpful. You know, my initial call lasted about an hour. And we went over lots and lots and lots of stuff, half of which I didn't even think about beforehand. And I came out of it going, wow, this guy's really awesome. I called my wife and was like, I think I actually got this guy knows what he's doing. I was like, well, she's like, didn't you submit to him? Well, yeah, but now I really know, you know. So that initial conversation is very, very helpful engaging it. If you have someone who, you know, 5 minutes into the call is like, okay, well, you know, and you can almost tell they're sort of, you know, doing the looking at the watch thing on the other end of the line, that's a red flag to me. The agent should be spending time with you because you're ultimately the reason they're going to make their money, and that's going to be based on the relationship you have with them.
We got a lot of things on this sheet, but one I want to recommend is for the call. About halfway down, there's Jenna Peterson, who I found just by looking for questions to ask. She has a one-page sheet that has about 15 to 20 questions on it. Don't get obsessed about every question, but it will make you think of the things you want to talk to an agent about if you get to the offer stage or you're considering going with them. I've done a fair amount of research, and then I went through the sheet and went, oh, crap, yeah, I should ask about that. And by the way, it's not a horrible thing if an agent doesn't have an answer to every single one of those questions.
No, right.
Because it's situational, but it'll give you sort of a scope. And the one thing I think definitely is, if your agent only wants to talk to you for 5 minutes, you talked about enthusiasm.
Yeah.
You want your agent to be enthusiastic about what you're doing, because then you can share that, and then they'll support you during the tough times. It'll carry you through when, you know what, guess what, it's months going on, months yeah. going on, months.
Hurry up and
sometimes
wait.
That happens.
And if you got five, if he's got 5 minutes for you, she's got 5 minutes for you now when she's trying to actually sign you as a client, how is she going to have you, you know, how much time is she going to have for you in 6 months when you're already established with her? So you need to feel comfortable with her.